Michigan's Upper Peninsula is my home and Escanaba is my hometown. I'm Craig Warple. Hometown Escanaba connects with the people, activities, and newsmakers of Escanaba and the UP. Join us for more interviews at hometownescanaba.com. Now, let's find out what's going on. Joining us this morning is Jim McNeil, Escanaba City Manager. Thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it. Last night at the Escanaba City Council meeting, you talked a little bit about energy credits and the purchase of having to do that. My first reaction when I saw that on the agenda was, you have a solar farm.
We do. Our solar farm does provide the city renewable energy credits, but it's a small fraction of what we're required. Years ago.
But you just added on.
Yeah, it's still only a fraction. So years ago, RECs were a requirement. The city had our solar farm. It still, at that time, only met a fraction. The last couple years, RECs or renewable energy credits were optional. We decided we're not going to participate. We still have our RECs from our solar farm, but the additional RECs required, we chose not to participate. Of course, now with the energy law, RECs again are required. So we're looking at, even when RECs were optional, the price was continuously going up pretty quickly. Now that they're required,
they're going to go up.
They're going to go up even more. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the requirement begins at 15%. 2030, it goes up to 50%. And then I think it even maybe maxes out at 80% down the road.
How much of that can be provided by your electrical provider?
So we've been talking with NextEra, who we buy our power from, to see if it's something they can help us with. We're having a lot of different discussions, even with other utilities, brokers that buy and sell RECs. We're limited right now under our energy agreement. So energy agreements are very long-term. The city's is very good. We have a low cost to buy energy. But part of that is we're limited with how much, I think we're limited to 4 megawatts of production of electric generation ourselves. We're far below that right now. But over time, it wouldn't be unreasonable to think that we could reach that ceiling. So certainly that's something we're going to be looking at can that ceiling be lifted or is it even enforceable?
Why is it the city's responsibility to do that instead of the energy provider?
That's a good question. And I don't know that I'm the right one to answer it. RECs are a requirement by state law, mm-hmm. For electric utilities. So, you know,
because it's an electric department, it's considered a utility, even though you don't produce your own energy anymore?
We'd only distribute, but we are still required under the law. And when you think of a REC, they've been doing carbon credits for years, too. Not something that we've been impacted by, but when you think of how it functions, it's a way of using market forces to implement renewable energy. RECs are an effective way to do that. It mm-hmm. does work. It uses market forces to get it done. But certainly when change happens like this, when something's mandated, it does come at a cost. And that's really something we're looking at and the reason we brought RECs to the council last night was we can still buy RECs at a pretty good cost. We're expecting, and we've seen in other states where right now RECs are around $4 per REC. They've gone double digits. And as the requirements ratchet up, it's not unreasonable to think that we couldn't end up there too. So as we're in our budget season right now too, we're looking at also doing a rate study in our next budget, but we don't want to end up in a situation where requirements keep increasing, the price of RECs increases, and then all of a sudden we have to increase rates dramatically. So we're trying to plan today, to start working in those future costs.
You might have to back up here a little bit and say what renewable energy credits are.
It's a certificate. So it's a piece of paper that says we're buying, in essence, this much renewable energy right from the market. They expire. So a REC has a five-year lifespan, which means, you know, we can buy some today, but it's going to expire, and we're always going to have to keep buying RECs unless we start producing our own or more of our own, which we are looking at. I think it would be pretty difficult for us to fulfill our obligation entirely, especially once it goes up to 50%. The 15% number even would take a pretty large area of land for solar. But we are looking at that, and site selection is important too.
You were looking at a spot in Northtown as a second possibility. Is there still expansion opportunities at the airport?
I don't know if there is at the airport. I know we've been looking at a site in Northtown there, closer to one of our substations. And that's important, is ideally you want these facilities, you know, in a good place for transmission. You really can't just put it anywhere.
And it's pretty open over there, too.
It is.
You don't have to cut anything down or anything like that. So,
and, of course, a big part of the energy law, a controversial part, has been the site selection, mm-hmm, and the Michigan Public Service Commission. I don't see that as being a big issue inside city limits. And certainly, you know, the concerns with that we're mindful of, too, that, you know, we wouldn't be putting solar near homes, you know, in the same way that the airport or the site that we've considered
in Northtown.
Need the larger
solar, not just residential solar.
Yeah, industrial-type solar, you know, we certainly would not be putting that where it would be offensive.
Yeah. Well, nothing for this budget then? You just put it out there for discussion? Or are you considering it for this year's budget?
We don't have any plans in the next budget to develop solar. We will be looking at some grant opportunities, and certainly if a grant were to strike, we would adapt and see what we could do, but we don't have any intentions right now of building solar.
You did have your second public hearing for the upcoming budget, the 2024-25 budget that you're developing. It needs to be approved by July 1st, and so how's the process going?
It's been tough. This week, we're wrapping up one-on-one budget meetings with the departments. A lot of long-term forces are getting more difficult. Pension costs continue to rise. And the nice thing, since we've now left MERS, it's pretty easy to adjust our funding policy or really, I guess, create a funding policy within the bounds of what we can afford, where we could still stay aggressive to reach full funding, but not totally break the budget. We are looking at a pretty high number of budget cuts, just to try and reach a manageable deficit or something close to balanced.
In which departments?
Pretty much the entire general fund. I mean, there's certain departments where there's a limited room to cut. You look at something like the clerk's office or assessors or controllers, where you know, you have really just the expense are a couple office staff, and you know, that's been reduced over the years. But certainly,
public works, recreation, public safety.
Exactly. Those are the departments that have some larger budgets, and certainly there will be cuts. Right now, the plan is, you know, nothing like layoffs, but certainly different means of reducing the budget number. And then the utilities are another thing. And we've talked about electric this morning, but water, wastewater is something that as the projects are moving, you know, the grant funded work performed mostly by the contractor still has work alongside it. And that was something last night too, where we bought some equipment. When we have an area for water main replacement, 10 blocks shut off, no water, and then a boil advisory when it's turned back on, when the contractor is doing that work, we'd like to go around and replace old valves, fire hydrants, and really do as much of it as we can. So that type of work will be done with city labor and city water fund materials. Although we have a $60 million grant funded project coming, we also have a lot of city water fund work happening right alongside it. And that's something that certainly is going to have a budgetary impact. Mr. Lampy and I meet for 4 hours this morning to discuss his budgets right after this.
Well, that sounds fun.
Yeah, it's...
Although you do have a big budget only because of the construction that you have going here the next few years, but that's dedicated funds.
Yes. Yeah, the budget season's grueling. We're looking forward to moving past it, but I think when you step back and look big picture of our efforts to fund some of these long-term pension liabilities, to get this much infrastructure work done with grant funds, but also utilizing city street funds and other water department and wastewater department funds, we are really creating a tremendous amount of value.
I think the last time you raised the utility rates, water especially, you made mention that it would continue to go up the next few years to try to get it more stable. Do you feel now that it's going to be more than what you're anticipating?
I think it'll all be pretty close to what we were anticipating, and it always changes. A new grant comes in, a different piece of equipment breaks, a different mandate comes in, a rule changes. We're always adapting to what's required. But no, it's we are fully expecting, given the state of our infrastructure and what our obligations are, that rates will be climbing long term. I don't expect, like the double digit rate increases that we had years ago, but certainly you look at the inflation impact, that we've all seen. But when you look at how it's affected utility work and capital projects, the 8% type inflation that consumers reportedly experienced, that number isn't even close. We just had a generator bid that came in double than what we anticipated.
Wow.
I remember hearing a story of a water plant or a wastewater plant that was bid out downstate that came in at three times what it would have been. Lead service lines, when we first started, were 5,000 or 6,000 per service, and they're up at 16,000 a service. So,
meaning a house?
Yes, for one lead service line replacement.
Okay.
One block of street reconstruction is pretty close to $300,000. So materials are high. I think we've seen some relief there, but labor costs continue to be really high. And if you ask around, is there really any expectation that that's going to change? Certainly I think we could expect that the pace of cost increases could slow down, but we're still adjusting to what we believe is the new normal here, of prices not returning to what they used to be.
All right. Well, as you're dealing with that, you did have another item on the agenda dealing with photography, the aerial photos, but this is not just sending up a drone and taking pretty pictures.
Right. So we have the city GIS, which you can access through the city website, It's used quite a bit. I know there's a lot of real estate professionals and other, even just residents of Escanaba that use GIS. Internally, we use it all the time, all different departments. But the last time we had aerial photography was in 98. Certainly, when you go to Google Earth, you can see that's a huge improvement over our aerial. So we've had the opportunity to jump on a state program here to get it done less than half of what we initially thought it could cost. We do have some cost savings in the engineering department. So, you know, this is kind of like if we move quickly, we have an opportunity at a good cost. And since we have some savings, it really will balance out in that department and not require a budget amendment.
Jim McNeil is Escanaba's city manager. I appreciate your time with us and good luck at the meeting today.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. A special thanks to our sponsor, SwedishPimple.com. Check out all of the fishing lures made right here in the Upper Peninsula at SwedishPimple.com. You can continue to follow us at HometownEscanaba.com. We connect with the people, activities, and newsmakers from Escanaba and Michigan's Upper Peninsula.